Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie. Welcome to Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Katzenberger. Well, we are back today with a great new show for you after a little time off, and we've got all kinds of fun stuff to talk about. The Indiana State Fair, Gen Con, a brunch fest, coffee, there is so much going on, and I'm so glad you've tuned in today to check it all out. First, we'll be talking with Indianapolis resident and State Fair super fan Nora Spitznagel, who has attended every single day of the Indiana State Fair every single year for the past 20 years. And we'll talk about what she loves about the fair and what you should check out when you go. We'll also hear about a brunch fest that's coming up when we talk with local food advocate Ashley Brooks of A. Rose Hospitality and Baby Got Brunch. Gen Con is also coming up, and we'll talk with BJ Davis and Andy Gilman of B Coffee Roasters. Their shop is right in the middle of all the gaming action in downtown Indy, and we'll find out how they have fun with convention goers and what it's like to stay open 24 hours a day throughout the convention. And speaking of coffee, we'll also check in with Tinker Coffee's Steve Hall. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. State Fair has started its 17-day run, and this year's theme is the wonderful world of food. Every day of the fair celebrates a different type of food with an Indiana connection, which seems just about right, given that fairgoers say that food is their top draw. But there's more than food at the Indiana State Fair, and Indy resident Nora Spitznagel talks with us today about what she loves about the fair. And she should know, since she has made it a point to attend the fair every day, every year, for the past 20 years. So tell me a little bit about your history with the State Fair. So you've been going for a long time.
I have. History is a nice way to say it. Some of my friends say obsession.
So it could be that too, right?
But I've lived just a mile from the State Fair for the last 20 years, and I've gone every single day.
Every single day?
Every single day.
So Of every single fair. For the last 20 years?
For the last 20 years. So
you know, obsession might be, it might be about right. But how did it start?
I grew up on a farm in Boone County, was in 4-H. We also lived close to the county fairgrounds, as close as you live to anything in the country. So loved the Boone County Fair.
Okay.
Loved. I never did well enough in 4-H, you know, to get that championship ribbon to go to the State Fair, but it was fun to look at all my friends' projects. My family, I have three siblings, so there are four of us within 6 years. So I don't know how my parents got us out the door every day.
Oh, my goodness.
Let alone, but the State Fair was our big summer adventure.
So you came to it as a family.
So came to it as a family. Just thought it was the most wonderful thing in the world. So when I moved a mile from there, I just could not believe my luck that I got to go every day. So.
Well, now... You must have moved away for a while. You didn't always live in Indiana, did you?
I did. I moved to the East Coast for 5 years for work and lived in New Jersey. So I was so excited. I'd entered the open show here before I left and entered the open show in New Jersey.
And the New Jersey State Fair.
The New Jersey State Fair.
Okay. Who enters in the New Jersey State
Not
Fair?
Not very many people. The State Fair opened, and I couldn't believe there were no animals or 4-H projects. There were people. It was more of a carnival.
Okay. So it's not like our State Fair.
No. And there were card tables set up with the different displays.
Oh, my goodness.
And this woman came running over to me and said, "Thank you for entering. Where are you from?" And I said, "Indiana." And she laughed because she was from Indiana also.
Oh, my goodness. You found someone from Indiana in New Jersey.
Yes.
At the State Fair.
At the State Fair. So
what did you enter in New Jersey?
They had a little bit different things in the open show, so a lot of cooking items. And then when I realized that nobody was entering, I was trying lots of different cookies and pastries and things just so that they would have the table full.
Did you win?
I did.
Oh, my goodness.
And there they not only gave ribbons, but I have a nice crystal bowl. Ooh. And some nice things. So, yeah, the prizes were different.
So tell me about coming to the State Fair here and what it's been like for you over the years.
Oh, it's... I really enjoyed watching the fair grow, and all the improvements they made for the infrastructure has been wonderful. I love the idea of themes that we get to dive deeply into something.
Right, and this is the food year.
Is the food year, which at first I was a little worried because I feel like
it's always about food. The food year, right?
And I always get bummed out that people only want to talk about the fried food and only want to talk about the food on the stick. So I think this is a great year to celebrate
because we're talking
about
all the different kinds of
food. Yes, so they got the food and the stick on there.
It is. There's a.
But it's celebrating Indiana's hardwood production with the stick. So.
Exactly. So there's an Indiana tie-in there.
Yes. So I'm excited about that.
But now, do you enter contests here too?
I do. I enter Snickerdoodle cookies.
Oh my goodness! Now those have won in the past.
Which is fun. It's like my cookie kind of. That's great.
Nora's Snickerdoodle. Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
English toffee. I've never gotten first place. I keep, moving up a little bit.
Have you gotten ribbons, though?
I have. I've placed, which is exciting. And then there's the antique division. So
Now, what's that?
So the categories vary from a silver spoon collection to pocket watches to ugly lamps.
Oh, my God.
So I've never had the ugliest lamp, which I guess is a good thing.
But have you tried?
I have. I've gotten as high as third place.
Okay.
So I entered an owl lamp this year. It might be a little too cute to be ugly, but we'll see. And then I collect Pez dispensers, so I enter the baby boomer toy.
Oh, my gosh.
And then there's a cookbook division for old cookbooks. And Indiana books, just really fun stuff to look at.
Oh, no.
That's also in the Indiana Arts Building.
Now, see, I think that's very cool, the whole sort of cultural aspect of the state fair, because, people do get distracted by the food on the stick and the deep fried everythings. But there's a lot going on.
There is. There's, the 4-H buildings you could spend a whole day in looking at all the dresses and engines and
all the things the kids make.
The kids make and the notebooks they make and, being a 4-H'er, I know the hard work that they put into those, or sometimes the last-minute work that happens. Well, but those usually don't make it to the state fair. So
that's right. So what does the state fair, the run of the state fair, look like for you? So you're ready to dive right into it, right?
I am. Partly knowing that I'm going to go all 17 days helps me break it up a little bit and not feel like I need to do everything every day. But
17 days. I mean, that's more than 2 weeks, and you're going to be there every day.
It is a lot, and sometimes if it's a really busy work day, I'm only going at like 6 a.m. and having breakfast and saying hi to people or going after work. So there are not many days I get to be there the whole day, but those are my favorite days.
So what does a day look like for you at the State Fair?
I always make a beeline to to Pioneer Village.
Okay,
it's
now
so
that, is that, like, is that
there.
Like your sort of base camp?
It is. Pioneer Village was started by Purdue University in 1961. The same year I was born, so I feel a real kinship with it.
Okay.
And there's so many people doing their artisan work back there. And I have lots of friends that I only see once a year because they're there for the fair. People who give up their vacation time to come and do woodworking or leather working or run those hot displays with the steam engines and cutting wood and things back there. So
you've come to know them over the years, I bet.
I have. It's really fun. I always look forward to seeing Dick Reel, who does woodworking, and Ellsworth Christmas, and isn't that the best name ever?
That's a great name.
Who does wheelwright work, and then it's so much fun to see everybody.
So say you start there. So say you pop in and say hello there. Then what would a day, where do you go from there? I mean, it's like animals, foods, and rides.
Right. I usually don't do the ride part. I don't know how my parents, we just never saw the rides.
When you came to the state fair as a kid, the tractor tram
was the ride.
The one that takes you around. So you didn't go on the merry-go-round and the tilt-a-whirl and everything?
No. It could have been my fear of heights or it could have been them. But there is a new ride this year.
Oh, my goodness. Are you going to go on that?
The sky ride? I've looked at it. I have a real fear of heights. So
oh, my goodness.
That's part of it. The last Ferris wheel I ever did was at the Indiana State Fair several years ago.
Oh, my gosh.
And I think I had my eyes closed and, was whimpering the whole time. But the sky ride looks really neat. It goes slowly. It's only 35 feet up.
Okay.
And it goes over Main Street. So that's a good time to look in, see the animal barns and all the cool things that are happening.
So you might actually ride that. And it's kind of startling because Main Street's sort of been reconfigured.
Yes.
Yeah, the gazebo area that people remember isn't there.
It's gone. That's where the ride starts.
Right.
And then they have kind of jogged the street, which is nice.
Uh-huh.
So there's more places to sit and places just to enjoy being there. More shade and things.
Right.
It used to just be a big slab of concrete.
We've been talking with Indianapolis resident Nora Spitznagel about the Indiana State Fair. We'll be right back with more on the fair here on Eat, Drink, Indy Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back here on Eat, Drink, Indy Radio talking with Indiana State Fair superfan Nora Spitznagel, who will be attending the fair every day during its 17-day run and who has attended every day of every fair for the past 20 years. So she has lots of favorites to tell us about, including Pioneer Village, the Daily Tractor Parade, and the Heirloom Recipe Contest, one of my own favorites.
What other things do you particularly look forward to at the fair? That because, I mean, like I said, 17 days is a lot of time.
It is a lot of time. As we said, I love going in the 4-H buildings. When you walk downstairs to where all the baked goods are, you can just smell that sugar. it's very fun down there.
Well, now, you've also entered the Heritage Recipe Contest.
Yes, yes.
The Heirloom Recipe Contest, I think.
Which really is my favorite contest at the fair. Partly, they're preserving recipes from our heritage from Indiana, which is wonderful, and it's wonderful to hear people's stories.
And the story is a big part of it.
It's a big part of it. In fact, it's why it's my favorite contest, because
Aww.
Writing the story is half of it. I think I'm a better writer than baker, so that works. But it's so much fun to hear about other people's stories, and I've learned things about my own family from interviewing my mom
recipes that
I've entered. So.
Yeah, tell me some of the heirloom recipes you've entered. I have fun getting to judge that contest sometimes. So, what have you entered in the past?
I have entered a cranberry salad that my mom learned to make from her mom, and my grandmother learned to make it from her mother-in-law, and we all learned to make it in the same kitchen. So to think about four generations in one kitchen, and then I also learned stories about my grandmother that I never knew. Who had also lived in that farm. So,
oh my gosh.
Just really,
so I love,
really neat stuff.
I love the food and history kind of connection with that contest. But there are all sorts of other things down there in that Family Arts Building.
It's renamed the Indiana Arts Building.
The Indiana Arts Building, that's exactly right. So there's, you can see the cake decorating,
yes.
All the different cookies. You can see the winning snickerdoodles.
Which is exciting. hopefully. You'll see somebody's winning. And they have open judging, which is great. They're doing more and more of that. So you can see what's being made and hear the judges' comments. Upstairs, there's the 4-H fashion reviews,
right.
Which is fun. And then one of my favorite things, I think it's the last Saturday of the fair, all the county queens do a parade on that runway stage.
Right.
And they dress either what means something to them or to their county. So Swiss County, will have the Swiss Miss person.
Right?
Or, if there's somebody who loves playing tennis, they might be in a tennis outfit. But it's really fun to see all those young women and what they're excited by and how they're willing to get a little goofy for the contest, which
is
great.
It is a little goofy. There's the, like the cheese sculpture, and interesting things like that. But there's, a lot of Indiana foods as well. And now we have the craft beer,
yes.
and that sort of thing. Do you have favorite foods and stuff that you always want to get a sample of?
I do. I'm a big fan of all of the farmer things. So the ribeye producers and
the
pork producers.
Absolutely. The ribeye sandwiches and the pork burgers.
As a kid, that was always the big argument between us. Were we going to the pork tent or the beef tent? And then I think we figured out that, we could all have what we wanted and just
right.
meet back. I have my annual glass of tomato juice from the Master Gardeners Agriculture Horticulture Building. and 4-H vegetables are in there, and open show vegetables also in that Ag Hort Building. And that's a nice air-conditioned, cool place to be.
All right. Do you have any animals that you like to see?
I do. I have cousins whose children show sheep, so that's always fun to try to find them. And we never did animals and 4-H, but I was always so jealous of those kids who got to sleep at the fair.
They do, and on the kids, and they're there, you know, the whole time, and they're just sleeping in their cots next to their sheep or their pigs or whatever.
As an adult, it looks miserable, but as a kid, it was would have been the best thing ever.
Well, now, what about the parade every day? That's kind of a thing.
Yes, so there's the daily parade. I always call it the tractor parade. It's really fun. If you're right behind Pioneer Village, there's the antique machinery field, but a lot of those tractors fire up and take a lap around the fairgrounds. So that's, I always try to hitch a ride some fair.
I bet you have been in that parade.
I've been successful. And the big instruction is you have to smile. And I always think, how could you not smile when you're riding in an antique tractor going around the fairgrounds?
Oh, my goodness. Well, any advice do you have for people who might have skipped the fair or maybe aren't quite as enthusiastic? Any advice for visiting?
Oh, sure. Find those outside corners. Find the stuff that maybe you haven't seen before, like Pioneer Village or going into the barns. A lot of those barns are air-conditioned. So for people who are hot and miserable, that's a good place to go and look beyond, like, the world's largest pig. Walk a few more stalls back and say hi to those 4-H kids that are there. It's really fun to feed on their enthusiasm about being there.
We've been talking with Indiana State Fair superfan Nora Spitznagel, who is also a local freelance writer and director of programs at Second Helpings in Indianapolis. You can follow along with her fair visits on Facebook, where you can check out her entry in the Ugly Lamp Contest, which won a blue ribbon. For more information on the fair, go to indianastatefair.com. Indianapolis has been enjoying a lot of food fests lately. Tacos, barbecue, mac and cheese. But later this month, Indy gets its first brunch fest. Local food advocate and Milktooth co-founder Ashley Brooks and A-Rose Hospitality brings us Baby Got Brunch, which takes place August 26th at Pan Am Pavilion in downtown Indianapolis. Ashley tells us about the idea for a brunch fest and how the proceeds will benefit the Patashew Foundation and its efforts to combat childhood hunger.
Tell me a little bit about the fest that we have coming up.
So this is kind of Indianapolis's first brunch festival, and it's going to be Saturday, August 26th at the Pan Am Plaza Pavilion.
Now, what's it called?
It's called Baby Got Brunch.
Oh, that sounds so much fun.
Yeah. So this is actually, a benefit for the Patashew Foundation. And they believe that no child in our community should go to bed hungry. So they just have a really amazing foundation. They do really good work and just deal with a lot of, food access issues. And
It's going for a good organization, absolutely. And we've talked a lot with the Patashew Foundation here before. But tell me how the idea came about. Why brunch? And why a brunch fest?
Yeah, so I, being a co-founder of Milktooth, all things brunch.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so you have a brunch background, that's for sure.
A little bit, yeah. And I love a good brunch. I love boozy brunch, too, so even
so
better.
I understand there's going to be some libations involved.
Yeah, so this is a 21 and over event.
Okay, so let's get, so that's
yeah,
a
we'll get the basics.
Right there.
Yeah, and with a ticket price, it includes open bar. So, and we're doing something called a Build Your Own Bloody Mary Bar. It's being sponsored by Goose the Market. So if you're familiar with the Smoking Goose and all their
absolutely
wonderful charcuterie, and they'll provide, the cheese and the pickles and everything that goes with a good Bloody Mary.
So how did you come up with the idea of having a festival focused on brunch food?
Yeah, so like I said, I think, being Indy's first brunch festival, it hadn't really been done before, and I think it's kind of an obvious choice for me personally. And I am just getting into doing more fun events. I love, dealing with food advocacy and food justice and all things philanthropic when it, comes to food. So all the events that I do or collaborate on, I like to have that element.
But now, tell me
what the
brunch fest will involve. Well, what kind of, obviously brunch food, but what kind of food, what kind of restaurants, and sort of, how it's going to feel.
Yeah, so there's actually 25 competing restaurants, and we have 5 categories of brunch food that they can compete in.
Okay, so this is a competition
as
well.
It is a competition, yeah. There's a lot of entertainment at this event. So 25 restaurants competing, and the five categories are like biscuits and gravy.
Oh, my goodness.
We have waffles, of course, bacon, eggs, and then toast. So, So you'll get to see five restaurants or chefs competing in each one, and there's going to be prizes, and we'll do like a live text to vote.
Oh, no, that's fun. So that's how the voting will be,
yes.
The people who actually attend.
Yeah, mm-hmm, that's right. So, so there's going to be open bar, like I said, and our coffee partner for this event is Bee Coffee Roasters, and they're actually going to be putting on a sort of League of Lattes.
A latte art competition
on stage.
Oh, that's fun, too.
So, yeah, you'll get to see that, and hopefully they can bring enough baristas out on a Saturday morning.
One of that might be a little hard.
Yeah. So, but it'll just be another fun element to the event. We'll have an MC on stage, and DJ Indiana Jones will be up there, like, playing some hip-hop tunes, and it's kind of a throwback to the 90s hip-hop. So,
well, it sounds like a cool event and a neat feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how's it going to work? You know, you said it's at Pan Am Plaza?
Yeah, so it's all inside. And we have two kinds of tickets. General admission is $50. We still have tickets available. And that is from 11 to 2. And then mm-hmm. if you get VIP tickets, which there are only a few left.
Oh, my goodness.
Actually, they're almost sold out. That gets you in an hour early. So you can kind of avoid those lines and just kind of get the whole experience without a bunch of people, but we're capping this event at 1,200 people, so
okay.
Hopefully it'll be a good guest experience, and you know, they won't have to wait too long in lines, and it'll just be fun.
Well, now, what does your ticket get you? Do you get samples of a certain amount of things, or do you get to try everything, or how does it work?
Yeah, so it's open bar and unlimited access to the food.
Also, you don't get like five things.
No,
or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, you can kind of go up to whoever, like whatever looks good. You can try one of everything, and they're just little, you know, just little bites, just small portions of each. So,
oh, nice!
You'll definitely get full.
So you can have your portion of biscuits and gravy, your portion of some waffles, and
right.
And maybe there's avocado toast in there. I don't
That's
know.
That's right. I hope so. I love a good toast.
So now, tell me a little bit more about the beneficiary. So this benefits the Patashew Foundation,
mm-hmm.
and they worked for, you know, to combat food insecurity in
That's
kids.
Right.
How did you get together with them?
That's an issue that's really, really important to me, and I just am sort of appalled that at the statistic of like one in five children in central Indiana experience food insecurity, which means they have to skip one meal a day because they don't have access or don't have the funds, or they experience hunger at least once a day, and I just, you know, want to get that out there and see how we can address that. And there's some really great organizations that are addressing these issues, like the Patashew Foundation and Indy Hunger Network and all of them. So they're doing really great work, and I just want to promote that.
So tell me a little bit more about your work as a local food advocate and with A Rose Hospitality.
Yeah, so I love all things food in Indianapolis. I'm involved in a lot of different aspects of food here. I started a farmer's market in Garfield Park a couple years ago.
That's right. Now, we've talked with you before about the farmer's market.
Yeah, so that's going really well. We just became a nonprofit this year.
So this is the second season
for
that.
This is the second season, and it goes through October. And that's been just kind of growing slowly, and we'll just continue to grow it and partner and with local organizations. I was involved in Slow Food Indy for a few years on the board. So just really, that's really important to me.
Well, clearly, you know, you have a real love for Indianapolis and its food community. Are mm-hmm. there more events like this in your future, maybe?
Yeah, I actually, along with all of that, I just love producing events and creating experiences for people. And making connections, I think, is what I'm best at. So this brunch fest is a little awkward for me because I'm so used to being behind the scenes.
Right.
And that's kind of where I prefer to stay. But I'm very much in the forefront of this event. So I got to get used to it.
Well, and so we might see some more brunch events.
Maybe? Yeah, I'm hoping so. I'm hoping this will be a sold out event. We're almost there. I think we have great participants, and I think it's going to be really successful, and hopefully we can continue to do more.
Oh, that'd be great. So we can look for more biscuits and gravy and toast and waffles down the road somewhere. Now tell me a little bit more details on where people can get tickets and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so you can go to eventbrite.com and just search Baby Got Brunch. We have a Facebook page and an Instagram with links to buy tickets on both. It should be pretty easy to find.
And ticket prices, again, are?
$50 for general admission and $75 for VIP.
We've been talking with Ashley Brooks of A Rose Hospitality about Baby Got Brunch. For more information on the upcoming Brunch Fest, look for Baby Got Brunch on Facebook or check out Eventbrite for ticket info. I'm Jolene Ketzenberger, and we are back here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio with an event-focused show today. We've talked about the Indiana State Fair and about an upcoming brunch fest, and now we turn our attention to Gen Con, the convention that hits town August 17th through the 20th with fans of Star Wars, Star Trek, Pokemon, anime, role-playing games, historical miniatures, tradable card games, and more. As gaming fans descend upon downtown Indianapolis, one coffee shop finds itself in the middle of everything and has embraced its Gen Con customers in a big way. B Coffee Roasters, located just across from the Convention Center on Capitol Avenue, stays open 24 hours a day during Gen Con, and owners BJ Davis and Andy Gilman tell us how they get into the whole Gen Con experience.
So thank you guys for coming in. I know it's starting to get crazy for you.
Really? Yeah. It started getting crazy last week, and then we got hit with another convention that we didn't expect.
Oh, my goodness. So tell me why Gen Con is so crazy for you. I mean, you're kind of at ground zero of Gen Con. You're right there by the convention center, but I'm sure it's more than that.
Well, yeah, and we are literally across the street from the main door of the convention center. But Gen Con as a convention hits the city in a way no other convention does.
How so?
There are probably a couple different reasons, but one is the people are they're really into it. They look forward to this. And they look forward to this all year. And they're extremely nice and I don't want to repeat myself. But
they're really into it.
They're really into it. That's what I was going to say. They're so into it. And they're here that whole period of like Wednesday through, well, technically it's Thursday through Sunday, and this is what they look forward to all year.
And so they're going to work it, right? They're going to do it.
They're going to do everything. And honestly, a lot of these people save up all year their money to come to Gen Con, to come to Indianapolis.
And so they have money to spend.
They know they're going to spend it. We kind of follow the Gen Con chat boards a little bit. Just to see what people are talking about and see what we should be thinking about. Like, oh, I saw a big, long conversation about gluten-free, so I'm going to talk to my sandwich maker and see if we can add some gluten-free sandwiches, things like that.
Right?
I'm just trying to plan ahead and make them as comfortable as possible because they do dearly love this convention and they love the city.
And they seem to love you guys.
Yes.
Yes.
We do have quite a following and a fandom. We have people who have saved a visit tin card, you know, like that loyalty card from the previous year.
Mm-hmm. Right?
And they'll pull it out. And they'll be talking about on Twitter or in Reddit about how, oh, great, I can go back to my favorite coffee shop. And we're just thinking, this is kind of amazing.
Well, it is amazing. And that's why I wanted to talk about it. How did this happen? How did you become like the Gen Con coffee shop?
Well, I think there are a couple things. One is we actually are nerdy people.
I'm into Star Trek, Star Wars, that kind of thing. Andy grew up playing D&D and A lot of games, and his brother goes to Gen Con. We have employees who, when we first opened downtown and we hired our employees, it was like, oh yeah, we got to be ready for Gen Con. And we have one employee who's been with us since then, and he's just like, yeah, we have to be ready for Gen Con. And we were like, well, we don't know what you're talking about. It'll be fine.
We knew it was going to happen,
right.
But it was that first year we opened, it was, I think, 3 or 4 weeks after we opened. So we were just
going
to see how we could figure it out. And we didn't even have a sign, a logo on the window or anything. We put a big piece of paper with our logo on the window. And We had.
And they found you?
They found us.
Oh, they found us.
They did. And we, like, one of our employees at the time, he had a friend who was really in Star Wars, so he had this, like, Stormtrooper helmet on. And he said, it's a good thing I had that helmet on because I was just, like, so worn out. I'm sure I'd be scowling and they'd be like, what's wrong with that guy? Because we just didn't expect it. But then after that, we knew to start planning for it.
Now, and how do you plan for something like this? I mean, it's a major convention. But it's not your average convention of people sitting in business meetings.
Right. We've had other conventions that have been the similar amount of people on the paper, but you'll get, you know, business bump, but nothing that can compare to this.
Now,
so,
why is that? I mean, do they just love you that much?
I think that these people are really caffeine addicts, for one thing.
Well, and it does go on all night.
It is all night.
People
they
are
have
playing
food
games
trucks all there all night. It is the people are GenCon generates the mass of people in that zone of the city all day and all night. So it's not a lot of conventions will be. We have a show floor that's open till this time.
Oh,
we
sure.
have a couple classes or workshops at this time. Then we close down, and the people then wander
disperse,
all over.
Right.
Yeah, disperse exactly.
Right.
In
These
Gen
people
Con, they don't.
They don't. They stay there.
They don't want to miss a thing.
No.
Even if they're staying in Plainfield, they catch the bus in. They don't leave until they can't stand up anymore.
Oh my goodness!
And then they go back to their beds in Plainfield,
and then come back.
And then come back the next day. And, I mean, you know, it's just a mass of people having fun. It really is.
Well, now,
the joy of it.
Tell me about the hours that you're open for Gen Con. Because you're pretty much just open for Gen Con the whole time, right?
We kind of did the 24-hour thing as a fluke the second year. Right? It was the second year we started it?
No.
Or did we
okay,
do it
I don't
the first
remember.
Year?
We might have done it the
I don't
It's
know.
All a blur, right?
Yeah. So we didn't get very many people throughout the night, but people started talking about how cool it was that we were staying open 24 hours. I mean, people are still talking about how cool it is that we stay open for 24 hours. And other people are like, I don't believe that they do this.
Right.
How did I not know this? I've been coming here for 3 years. I didn't know they stayed open for 24 hours. It's like,
in the week of Gen Con, that whole week's busy, but we stay open till midnight on Wednesday because it's worth it.
This is the Wednesday before it started.
Yeah. The conventioner is not open, but there's enough critical mass of people just everywhere enjoying themselves that we are busy. And then we close, clean up, and open at 6 a.m. 6 hours later.
On Thursday morning.
And then after that, we stay open all the way until Sunday at 6 p.m.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. You're just open.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's busy.
So it's not like there's no one there.
Right. It's not like it's crickets and we have someone just sweeping the floors, which they do sweep the floors.
Right.
That's the only chance they get.
Yeah. But it's a line out the door. And we dress up.
Okay, now tell me about that. So you dress up for Gen Con.
Right. We do theme days. Every day we do a different theme for our staff so they can prepare something. And it is not a – on the cosplayers at Gen Con are very serious. So when you're actually talking about a cosplay, they have put a lot of effort and money into the detail.
These people have created these fabulous costumes with wings that move.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Things
like
that. No one expects that of us. But what we do is we do what works for a barista because you're behind the bar.
Right.
You're sweating,
you're running back and forth, you're filling iced coffees, you're pulling shots.
So you can't have wings or
exactly.
a Pikachu costume.
No, but you do what is, you can put in enough elements of a costume, especially with the theme of everyone else and the staff, that they get so excited. Do you remember a couple of years ago that the Mad Max movie came out?
Sure.
And in that movie, there are these crazy guys, and when they think they're going to, like, go on a suicide mission, they sprayed spray paint in their mouth. They said, we're chroming up, and they'd, like, go, ah. So one of our staff members found spray paint for wedding cakes that is edible.
Oh, my goodness.
It was silver, just like that. So we did that. We all did these crazy, like, Mad Max outfits. Like, you know, we have a normal T-shirt on, but maybe we had, like, some football pads or something, and we had sprayed our faces, and then the Gen Con people are so excited. They come up, they go, can we chrome up?
Oh, no.
And so then we realized people wanted it. We took out the spray paint and started spray painting people's faces, and they were so happy.
We've been talking with BJ Davis and Andy Gilman of Bee Coffee Roasters in Indianapolis about the upcoming Gen Con event that takes place August 17th through the 20th. We'll be right back with more from Andy and BJ here on Eat, Drink, Indie Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Coffee Roasters in downtown Indianapolis gets plenty of convention business in its location on Capitol Avenue, right across from the Indiana Convention Center. But the upcoming Gen Con Gaming Convention is different. The shop stays open 24 hours a day for its Gen Con customers, and the staff even dresses up and offers special rewards to its loyal Gen Con fans. B Coffee Roasters owners BJ Davis and Andy Gilman tell us about the fun they have during Gen Con and about the special promotions that keep customers coming in for coffee around the clock.
So this is a really incredible atmosphere that you guys have going.
Absolutely. And we enjoy it, but we also enjoy engaging with it. But engaging with it is really important part of what we do and why I think people are excited about us.
Now, do you start preparing for this early on for the best 4 days in gaming, right?
Oh, absolutely.
how do you prepare for something like this?
So we roast on a very, very small scale. So we're basically getting five and a half pounds out of our roaster per roast per 20 minutes, right? When you're roasting, what was it, 200 and how many pounds just for cold brew?
Yeah, something like that.
That takes a long time. So last year we had like two other people who were helping roast, and this year one of our people went off and, you know, had a baby yesterday.
We're so happy.
We are really happy for her. And so we also are getting ready to jump into the next biggest roaster, but we don't have it yet. And so we're just kind of trying to work all this
out.
Lots of extra hours.
So, you know, we did a management staff meeting, I think, in May.
Yeah.
To get ready for the next.
To, like, start planning and plotting out what we need to do to set up to it. Because even talking about roasting, which we do have to add extra time, but we bake all of our own muffins and things, so
baking started
that
this
we
week.
Have, we oh do that. Goodness. But then there's also we do promotions. We make a dice with our logos that they can get.
And tell me about that. Tell me about what people kind of collect from you
right.
guys.
Right. So, you know, one of the things that our line doesn't end. It just happened. It's out the door to the sidewalk all day long.
Is that really
true?
You have a line out the door
all day. All day. It doesn't stop. And I mean, it does peter out like somewhere between 7 p.m. to 9. And then it's just like an average coffee shop of people walking in, walking out the rest of the night until the morning.
And then the line starts.
And the line starts about around 6, I think. 6:30.
So it moves a little later every day.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you see the same people coming in over and over and over again, and they become your regulars. You know, I've got people.
You're 4 day regulars.
Like 4 day, but it's 24 hours. You've got these 4 day regulars who you almost get to learn about as well as your guys who come in every day throughout the rest of the year. And so we decided the second year that we'd throw out this idea of if you can come in 4 times, you need a special punch card. You get a 6-sided die with our logo on it.
Okay.
And we've been doing that for several years now, and people get really excited. We've also had people get really upset when we ran out.
Oh, no.
We made sure that our rules are very simple. We have the limited amount, and we have the limit out each day, you know, things like that. And people try to game the game. It's just the way it is. But it's kind of funny. But they go, good, 2 cards. It's like one per person. It's the rules.
Oh, right.
But this year, it's 50th anniversary, so we decided to up it.
So it's a big deal for Gen Con this
year.
Oh, yeah.
That whole sellout thing and everything, it's just going to be, oh boy.
Right.
But so we're doing the same 6-sided die. But then we have a token, which is like it's basically like a ceramic poker chip. It has a logo on one side, and it has, for all you other nerdy people like me out there, it has the message from the original Zelda game.
where you
go in and get the sword from this old man. He says, it's dangerous to go alone, take this. And any gamer is going to know. That's
know
just
that,
like
right?
the one of the basic, most classic.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. I wondered why it said that.
Now you know.
It has that. So that's kind of a fun token. And then if you come in 10 times, that's like, I think, 6th or 7th time, you get a 6-sided die or 10-sided die.
Oh, my goodness. So there are things that you're giving back to the community, you know, of gamers that are going to keep coming back to you.
And they want to collect all of them. They want to continue to get the set as well.
Right. Well, now you said you have something with your brother as well. Is that
right? Oh, I did tell you about
that. Because he goes to Gen Con.
My brother goes to Gen Con. He has a cadre of friends that go with him. And he is inside the convention center doing it full tilt. And so
playing games and participating in everything.
Exactly. And so we actually did this as a joke the first year, maybe, but it's a real thing. We have one of our chalkboards we're erasing, put all the rules for it. But he has control of my Twitter and Instagram.
Okay.
And the game is called Find Andy's Brother. And if you can find Andy's brother within the convention and get a willing selfie with him and bring the selfie back, we'll give you a free cup of coffee.
Oh, my gosh. That's a pretty good promotion right there.
I think we get maybe 6 people each year who can find him. It's a big convention, so I think that's pretty good. But it's fun for everybody. It's just a little like, you know, where's Waldo? And he's sitting there going, I just walked by the giant robot man.
Oh, and so people then are following
him. Right, could try to find him,
right.
And he'll take a selfie with himself. I mean, you know, selfie with himself, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, well,
selfie.
He shows where he's at.
Right,
shows where he's
where
at.
He is, and so people can try to find him.
Try to find him. He might say, thinking about demoing this game, and maybe people can find him. And like I said, it has to be in the convention hall, so if he can, because he loves coffee.
Oh, so it can't be over at the coffee shop,
if
right?
If he's sitting there going, hey, Andy, I did this, and they're like, wait a minute, that's his brother, that doesn't count.
So for people who might not know exactly where you guys are, tell me exactly where you are in relation to the convention center.
We are in the Pan Am Plaza office building on the first floor next to the parking garage doors, facing Capitol Avenue. If you were looking for the cross street, it would be Georgia and Capitol.
And that's where the main entrance, the big glass box that's the main entrance to the convention center, is right across from our front door.
Right.
So you literally are right in the middle of everything.
We are Gen Con Central.
Ground zero.
Ground zero, absolutely.
Oh, you know, the other thing we do, talk about that, is we do Jabba the Hutt.
Okay, well, you got to tell me about that then.
Jabba the Hutt is our little outdoor iced coffee stand.
Oh, my goodness.
And we also have canned and bottled, you know, bottled water and canned drinks out there. So we're a little less expensive on our canned drinks and bottled water than a lot of places.
A lot of people come and think, oh, that's so nice. But it's honestly, it's fine for us. We're just like, what?
Jabba's,
whatever.
We may be adding... maybe a keg of house-made soda to Jabba that might look like, or it may be inside, that might look like Romulan ale.
We do special drinks for Gen Con. We have we are doing a house-made soda called Romulan ale.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be bright blue.
Oh, my goodness.
We're doing a special drink called the Sith, which is a Campana, which is whipped cream over, espresso over whipped cream, but we're doing a house-made coconut whipped cream.
So it's vegan.
It's vegan.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
There's a sprinkle of black and red Hawaiian salt on top, which makes it the Sith, and a little drizzle of agave.
Oh, my goodness. So you guys you guys have fun with this.
We do.
Right?
We have a lot of fun.
It's so busy.
We have a surprise that's coming to Jabba the Hutt this year, and we won't divulge that.
No.
Well, okay. We'll have to wait.
A surprise employee.
Yes, a new employee.
Yeah.
We've been talking with BJ Davis and Andy Gilman of B Coffee Roasters about Gen Con, the 4-day gaming convention that comes to Indianapolis August 17th through the 20th. For more information on the coffee shop, check out bcoffeeroasters.com. Coffee culture in Indianapolis continues to grow. We've seen lots of new coffee shops and coffee roasters open in recent years, including Tinker Coffee Company. Co-founder Steve Hall tells us about Tinker Coffee, how it got started, about the cupping classes that consistently sell out, and what's in store for the growing coffee company. So tell me a little bit about the origin of Tinker Coffee, how it all came about.
We started officially, the business officially started in November of 2014. Leading up to that, the kind of idea started to germinate around maybe, you know, February of 2014. Jeff and I had the idea to start a coffee roasting business, help kind of develop the coffee scene, coffee culture in town. So it took us a while to find the space, find a roaster, buy coffee, learn how to roast.
That prompts the question, did you know a lot about coffee when you started? Did you have to learn how to roast?
We knew we really enjoyed coffee. We knew we liked drinking it a lot. Jeff knew more about specialty coffee through his travels with work. He had, you know, seen coffee cultures in other towns. And I liked to drink red ice, so just black coffee and shot of espresso. That was kind of the the biggest thing that I always thought of when coffee was brought up. But Jeff certainly knew more about specialty and kind of introduced me to this whole other side of the business. And leading up to it, we had no roasting experience, no coffee buying experience, no nothing, no cafe experience, certainly. So
you just wanted to do it? You wanted to do it because you were interested in it?
Yeah, exactly. We really liked this beverage, and we thought that it didn't, the culture here just didn't exist like it could. We thought there was potential for someone to come in and really focus on sourcing incredible coffee and roasting it really well. And we kind of, looked at ourselves and thought, if we could teach ourselves how to do this, could we be successful? And we both kind of thought, we can do this. So it was a little bit of just, having the confidence to kind of go out on your own and just diving headfirst into the industry was the biggest challenge for us initially. But
well, what was the reception, first of all, when you first opened?
The reception was good. We always talk about, I was actually talking with someone yesterday about like what was our first account? And I think we kind of benefited from coming up around the same time Milktooth came up. We kind of both started around the same time. And we were able and fortunate enough to have some friends at the restaurant that helped us get on the menu. And that has really, I think, helped our profile. So that was kind of like the origins, is we first had to learn how to roast, learn how to buy, and then get that coffee to a point where we felt comfortable bringing it out and putting it in front of people. As I said, that kind of coincided with the start of Milktooth, and then things kind of cascaded from there a little bit. We just kept roasting really good coffee, kept taking a ton of time to source. That's, one of the most important things. And then just roast really well and hit the pavement and get the coffee in front of people.
Now, how do you do that? How do you get your coffee in front of people?
A lot of it was, my background, while not in coffee, was in wine. And I sold wine in Boston and Chicago. So part of it was just being comfortable talking to people about this product that they might have never tried before. But with that said, I wouldn't say we were terribly aggressive, pushing coffee everywhere we could. We kind of took a more measured approach and, had a few accounts and kind of helped, scale a little bit more slowly. And we knew we needed to focus on the educational side. So the cupping classes have kind of always been a big thing for us to educate the public.
Now, tell me a little bit about the cupping classes, because that's very interesting. I sat in on one time, and so this is kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I think you were probably one of the first ones we ever did, really. That was fun. It's cupping is the way that coffee is evaluated in competition, at origin, throughout the world, because it standardizes the process by which coffee is enjoyed. If you brew a cup at home, there's a million factors that can affect the taste. And there's no like standard brewing method, sometimes there are, but anyway, it just levels the playing field. So everyone kind of experiences the coffee in the same way. So we knew that was going to be a big thing to just introduce people to what the flavor profiles of specialty coffee could be, understand how is this different from Folgers? Why is it more expensive than whatever you're buying? And that's been a fun way to do that. And there's been a huge interest in just learning about coffee from the public. I mean, we continue to be sold out kind of months in advance, and it's just a lot of fun for us to have that experience and share that experience with people.
Explain what goes on at a cupping and what you're doing and why it's why it's important to taste the coffee in a certain way.
There's kind of three main phases of a cupping. The first is to we very quickly evaluate the whole bean, so just the regular coffee beans by itself. We look for roast level, kind of get a sense for, is the coffee light roast, medium roast? Is the coffee wash processed or is it naturally processed? There are some, differences with how those beans look. But then we very quickly jump into grinding the coffee and evaluating the dry aromatics of the coffee. So coffee grounds, just dry in a cup. What do those coffees smell like? We spend some time evaluating the aromatics of the coffee dry. Then we spend just a couple minutes taking notes. Then we actually pour water on the coffee in little 8-ounce cups and let the coffee brew, essentially. And while that's happening, we're evaluating the wet aromatics of the coffee. So, how has the coffee changed? What am I smelling that might be the same or maybe different from what I smelled when the coffee was dry? You're kind of monitoring those nuances and differences. So we let the coffee brew for about 5 minutes like that. And then we take some spoons and break the crust that forms on the top of the cup, We scoop those grounds off, kind of the surface grounds, let the coffee cool for another 7 minutes or so, and then actually slurp the coffee with a spoon.
And it is slurping. I mean, you're slurping, right?
Oh yeah, it's slurping. It's you really want to let the coffee just, you know, spray across your palate. Let it hit all the corners of your mouth. It's fun to kind of think about how the coffee, I always call it, like, kind of lights up your palate, or like where it activates, like where you experience the maybe the acidity of the coffee, or how is the how is the mouthfeel? Is it more like a buttery, almost like creamy mouthfeel, or does it kind of very quickly wash away? So by slurping, you're able to introduce that very quickly. And yeah, it's fun. It's fun to evaluate everyone's slurps and, you know, help people along and give them, you know, a little bit more, you know, confidence in slurping loudly.
Because it is fun. It is kind of loud and slurpy. And but it's a different way of tasting. And so I think that in tasting the specialty coffees, it's a completely different way of tasting. It's not just, you know, you're slugging down, you know, your cup of caffeine in the morning.
Yeah, no, you really want to take some time, be a little bit more deliberate with how you're tasting. While we're tasting, we have a flavor wheel out in front of us, and it's really reminiscent of a wine tasting. You know, you want to help people, you know, at least think about, because we don't always want to be like, don't you taste the green apple in this? You kind of want to say like, so how are you experiencing the acidity, the brightness in this coffee? Does it remind you of any, is it herbal in some way, you know, or is it maybe floral? And kind of guide people a little bit and see what they say and get it to be a little bit more interactive. But
it really does vary. I mean, coffee's not just coffee.
Yeah, that's kind of the thing that like hurts us the most, is when people say like, oh, it's just coffee, it all tastes the same, right? And it's like, no, it really doesn't.
We've been talking with Steve Hall, co-founder of Tinker Coffee. For more information about the coffees and the popular cupping classes, go to tinkercoffee.com. Jolene Ketzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat, Drink, and D Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thank you so much for tuning in to our event-focused show today, and thanks also to our guests. Freelance writer, Indiana State Fair superfan, and Second Helpings Director of Programs, Nora Spitznagel. Milktooth co-founder and A-Rose Hospitality owner, Ashley Brooks. Bee Coffee Roasters owners, BJ Davis and Andy Gilman. And Tinker Coffee co-founder, Steve Hall. And thanks to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat, Drink, Indie Radio. Eat, Drink, Indie Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndie.com. Eat local, drink local, eat, drink, indie.